You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
Might be a 2-on-1. Here come the Hawks to break it. Carries, put it across. Here's Mata. He scores! Ole Mata!
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings.
Patrick Kane on this side had it escape him. Then he got it back. Kane to a wide open Mata. He shoots, he scores! Ole Mata!
Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men, presented by Manscaped, an official partner of the LA Kings. Thanks to this revolutionary company, manscaping accidents are a thing of the past. Just get yourself the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. Inside, you'll find products like their Lawnmower 3.0, which is advanced skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't cut you. Everything you need to keep trimmed and smelling nice is in the Perfect Package 3.0. You can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code KINGSMEN at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com and use the code KINGSMEN. The 2020 NHL entry draft is just days away, but that is not why we're here today. By now, you're probably aware that the LA Kings acquired defenseman Ole Mata from the Chicago Blackhawks this morning in exchange for reserve list forward Brad Morrison. It would be easy to look at the numbers Mata put up in the bubble recently, but while he spent the last season with the Blackhawks, he's played the bulk of his career to this point in a Penguins jersey. And given that he was part of the teams that won the Stanley Cup in back-to-back seasons, I wanted to talk to someone that covers the Pens to find out why he was traded to Chicago in the first place. Joining me now, he writes for the Tribune Review out of Pittsburgh, Seth Rohrbaugh. How are you doing today, Seth?
Very well. I appreciate the invite.
Appreciate you coming on. The reason I wanted to talk to you today is because Ole Mata was just acquired by the Kings for Brad Morrison. Now, he was acquired from Chicago, but he played for Pittsburgh for six seasons and was a first-round draft pick by them. So I figure you have a lot more insight into his game than anybody from Chicago may have. So right off the bat, the real question I want to ask is, this is obviously a salary dump by Chicago, but the question I have is, why did the Pittsburgh Penguins trade him to Chicago in the first place?
Well, it was a little bit of a salary dump there too, as well. Maybe not as, you know, drastic or as, you know, centric as maybe for Chicago's purposes. But the Penguins a couple years ago signed him to a 6-year contract extension with an overall cap hit of like $4 million and change. And at the time when they signed it, it seemed like a good investment in terms of, you know, their future blue line and everything like that. I mean, he was a young guy in his early 20s at the time. He was a former first round pick, I think like number 22 overall or something like that back in 2012. And, you know, he was a guy that just, you know, fit in on their blue line and how they wanted to play. But he dealt with some adversity early in his career. After a real good rookie season, he had a bout of thyroid cancer. He had a shoulder injury that had to be operated on twice when the first surgery just didn't work. So dealt with some adversity. And, after that great first rookie season, you know, you started seeing some hiccups in his game, particularly when it came to just getting beat in terms of, you know, a speed play or something like that. I mean, he would play an overall technically perfect game in a lot of ways, or fundamentally perfect game. But then every so often, you know, just someone, a real fast player, would just beat him cleanly up the wing and get a good scoring chance or just a really key goal. And, you know, I think a lot of times there were maybe too many instances of that that, you know, led to maybe having an unappetizing taste in manager's mouth for him. And so they started looking around to trade him, move his contract, move his cap hit. This also came at a time when the Penguins had a lot of left-handed defensemen, and every team kind of runs into that problem, I guess, is there was always more left-handed defensemen than right-handed defensemen. But they kind of had a surplus of left-handed defensemen, and back in the about 2 summers ago, they really wanted to sign Brandon Tanev. It was really high on Jim Rutherford's list in terms of free agent targets, and it just worked out that, you know, Ole Mata was the one contract they could move and send him to Chicago in order to clear cap space to sign Brandon Tanev. So, I don't necessarily sense that they were, you know, they were dumping him just for salary reasons or just dumping him because they were completely unhappy with their play. But it was kind of a combination of a lot of things, or, you know, that really kind of led to Ole Mata's tenure in Pittsburgh coming to an end.
He's 6'2", or he's listed at 6'2", 206 pounds, but you mentioned speed is an issue. He still manages to play 18 minutes a game, both in Chicago and Pittsburgh over the length of his career. Basically 18 minutes. He has one season where he plays north of 20, but for the rest of his career, basically between 18 and 19 minutes. So, I mean, do you see him? He's not young, but he's not old. He's 26, I think, in a few days at this point. So he's sort of right in the midst of his quote unquote prime. Do you see him as a second pair, third pair? I mean, would you be stunned if the Kings choose to play him with Doughty on the top pair? Is he capable of logging those kinds of minutes and that kind of responsibility, or is he more of a depth defenseman?
I'd be kind of surprised, to be honest with you. I mean, that's unless something, you know, changed with his game that I haven't seen over the past year. I think he's probably better suited to be your second pairing defenseman, kind of come in on the PK, maybe on your second power play unit, et cetera. Again, there was a time where the Penguins thought he could be a good companion to, say, a guy like Crystal Tang, who's, you know, maybe in that conversation of players just behind, you know, the elite defenseman like Drew Doughty, but that just never came into reality for a variety of reasons. But, you know, Olimata is probably best suited to be a number two defenseman in terms of the minutes and just the type of workload and the duties that come with that type of deployment. Now, I mean, if you're really, you know, struggling in terms of your depth and, you know, maybe you have a couple guys out of the lineup, okay, Olimata could kind of slip in there and play on your top pair for a little bit here and there, but, under ideal circumstances, I think for just about most teams in the NHL, Olimata is probably a number three or number four defenseman for you.
If he'd been drafted in the second round or the third round and had signed a contract extension for $2 million, do you think the Penguins would have traded him?
Probably not. Again, I think maybe some of the expectations that were foisted upon him, especially after such an outstanding rookie season, as an 18-year-old, where he just played a perfect, kind of almost perfectly fundamentally sound game. I think that maybe kind of put unfair expectations upon him, not just by fans, but by management as well. And I think it's fair to say he never really lived up to the demand on his contract that the management gave to him. So, again, if he had lower expectations, and I think the key factor is if he had lower cap hit, he'd probably still be a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins, but I still think, again, as you mentioned, he's what, 26 now or something like that. I mean, he's been in the NHL for 8 years, which is kind of hard to believe, but if he's 26, I mean, there's still maybe a ceiling he hasn't reached yet. So there's still room for improvement, but I think he's that time to reach his potential is maybe dwindling a little bit compared to maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Final question before I let you go. You mentioned cancer. He had a tumor removed, I think 5 or 6 years ago. That's a lot of pressure and fear, and, you know, that's awful for anybody to have to deal with, especially somebody that young. How did he handle it when it was happening, and how did he bounce back? Like, what's your impression of his personality and attitude off the ice?
A very kind of low-key, even-keeled guy. I mean, keep in mind, when he was stricken with this disease, he was like 19 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, where were you when you were 19 years old? I was having trouble playing PlayStation 1 when I was 19 years old. And here he is. He kind of took all that in stride. And keep in mind, he was also dealing with maybe kind of a banged up shoulder too. So he kind of dealt with all that really in a nonplussed fashion, and just was a really even keeled, was very mature for his age. And I think, you know, he had a pretty good strong support system here in Pittsburgh. I know Sidney Crosby kind of dealt with him a lot personally, one-on-one, and in terms of like helping him, you know, just adjust to life in North America, and just adjust to life to being a professional. UC Jokinen, who I think played a little bit with LA maybe a couple years ago, he was here in Pittsburgh at the time too, a fellow Finnish player. He first, Olimata's rookie year, he kind of lived with UC Jokinen's family. And, you know, UC Jokinen was a guy who's around the NHL quite a bit by that point in his career. So he kind of helped him adjust his life in North America too. So, but no, Olimata himself just in general has a very low key personality, but, at the same time too, a very mature guy, a very low key, even keel guy, doesn't seem to ever get overwhelmed by too much. And just in terms of life and, just the fact that the way he dealt with a very unfortunate, you know, diagnosis, obviously with cancer. Just the maturity and the level-headedness that he dealt with really just illustrated the type of person he is.
Excellent. Well, listen, we appreciate your time, and thanks for the insight.
I appreciate the invite, guys.
Joining me now to talk about the Olimata trade, the draft, and all things LA Kings, Jack Jablonski. How are you doing today, Jack?
I'm great. It's a good time of year. We got to watch the Stanley Cup. Congratulations
yeah, that's
to Tampa.
Right.
Yep. And now on to things that actually involve Kings hockey. So draft coming up. I'm excited to talk about it. Excited to see where the Kings go.
Everybody knows that I don't like the draft as an institution. And on top of that, I like conversations surrounding it even less. So I'm being forced to have all these conversations. But you've been doing a ton of homework for us heading into the draft. Are you excited for the Kings potentially 11 picks over the 7 rounds?
Yeah, it's going to be good. I mean, it's another step forward towards the future of the bright Kings roster to be. And I think you know, you look at 11 picks, I can't imagine they'll have all of them by the end of the night or the day on day two, just given the likeliness of trading and moving and getting players, or you know, combining picks to move up. It'll be interesting to see what happens, but it's going to be good. You know, I think the Kings have a lot to look forward to, and obviously with that number two pick coming up, you know, you're looking at a person that could truly change the organization just by one person.
Now, there was a lot of rumblings for months and months about the Kings potentially acquiring a left shot defenseman. We went through this last summer and sort of played out the same way in that Ben Hutton was acquired at the very end of the offseason. Now, I guess this isn't necessarily the end of the offseason, but since everything's compressed and everything's smushed together, it feels like heading into the draft, you know, this has been the end of months of talk for Kings fans, at least, right? Because we haven't seen them play since March 11th. But anyway, they acquired Olli Maatta in a trade this morning for Brad Morrison, who goes to Chicago. And I just want to say this briefly at the top about Brad Morrison, and then we never really need to talk about him again because this is really just an acquisition. I was not a huge fan of Brad Morrison's game. Didn't get a ton of opportunities to see it. But I am, you know, people, I've been seeing a lot of people say online, like, oh, this is great. It's Maatta for nothing. I actually think it's Maatta for improving yourself by divesting yourself of that player's career. And I won't go into detail, and I don't want to malign the guy. I'm sure he's a lovely guy. We wish him the best of luck in Chicago. But I think this is just as far as talent for talent swap. This is great. I think this is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly a salary dump for Chicago. But at the same time, you know, the Kings were able to get a young defenseman still, even though he's been in the league for quite a while, that has experience and has won two Stanley Cups. So anytime you can add a player in his 20s that has two Stanley Cups under his belt is something to look into and be excited about. You know, I don't think he's going to change the Kings roster immensely, but it's definitely in addition to the left side, which is obviously something that the Kings have a lot of question marks going into next season with.
Yeah, and as far as not changing the roster very much, you know, last season at the left D position, the Kings played Alec Martinez, Derek Forbert, Joachim Ryan, Ben Hutton. Those are four NHL veteran players who are gone now.
Yes.
And so replacing that, right, Maatta can't replace four guys, and I understand that all four guys didn't play on the ice at the same time, so it's not exactly being asked of him, but just looking at the minutes played, Martinez played 21 minutes and 31 seconds a game. Joachim Ryan played 19 minutes and 9 seconds a game. Hutton played 18 minutes and 16 seconds a game. Michael Anderson played 18 minutes and 9 seconds a game, so I wouldn't be shocked to see him put in a full season in a Kings uniform. But Derek Forbert played 17:51. Cale Clegg, in his brief time with the Kings, played 14 minutes. And Curtis McDermott played less than 14 minutes a game. So when I'm looking at the left side of the defense and I'm looking at the acquisition of Olli Maatta, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, how is this going to play out? Olli Maatta is not a 22, 23, 24 minute a game guy like Drew Doughty is, right? Drew Doughty averaged almost 26 minutes a game this season, and that was being nice to Drew Doughty, right? Like, I think he would probably prefer to play 29 or 30 minutes. So even if you do put Maatta on the left with Doughty on the top pair, and even if you do get Anderson playing 18 to 19 minutes a game on the second pair, you're still asking Curtis McDermott to expand his minutes per game by about 6 minutes, 5 or 6 minutes. And I'm not entirely sure that he's capable of that, or that it's wise, even if he is.
Yeah. I agree. So, you know, you broke it down a little bit there, and you look at the right side of the D for the Kings is set, and we know it's going to be Doughty. We know it's going to be Walker. We know it's going to be Roy. The left side, obviously, is an interesting area because, you know, McDermott is a guy who I think is a very intriguing talent because he's situationally very effective, I think, and 14 minutes is probably where he belongs. And I agree with you that, you know, he's not someone that you want to start putting on the ice for a few more minutes just because I think the level of his impact would go down immensely if he was out there more. As for the others, you know, you look at Mata, who's going to, I believe he played averages around 18 minutes in his career. So that's something that, you know, you have to expect that it's not going to go up by much at all if that's the case.
Right.
On top of that, you've got Bjornfoot, first round pick that obviously Doughty has been, has talked very highly of him. Is he going to be ready next year? You know, to be determined. You've got Mikey Anderson who came up and fit right in. So that's a positive thing to see last year. We'll see if that continues. And then on top of that, you know, Cole Holtz, another person, Cale Clegg, another person to mention that might be seeing time next year. And, you know, do any of them cement themselves into the Kings lineup? It's all to be determined. But yeah, there's a lot of things that are up in the air on that left side. And I think Mata is just kind of one of those cornerstones that you can slot into the lineup every single night and not have to worry about.
Yeah, it says to me, the trade does, that either that one of two things will happen. And this reminds me a lot of when the Kings acquired Ben Bishop and then immediately waived Jeff Zatkoff, for those of you who remember in the season that Quick was injured.
Yep.
And when they waived Jeff Zatkoff, I said, okay, one of two things happens. They're either going to acquire another goalie or Jonathan Quick is coming back tomorrow. And everybody said, no, that doesn't, blah, 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 blah. And I said, no, look, this is what has to happen because if somebody claims Jeff Zatkoff off of waivers, they only have one goalie and you can't do that. So this Mata acquisition, like I said, means one of two things to me. One, they're going to either retain Hutton or get another guy in that sort of class, right? Another 18 minute a night guy.
Yep.
Or they really think that Bjornfoot can play a full season at the number one slot with Doughty. Because I just don't know. It's only 5 or 6 minutes that you have to account for. But like Doughty's going to play 20-something or 30 minutes.
Yeah, 27 minutes.
And Roy and Walker are going to combine for somewhere in the neighborhood of 35 minutes. So that's it. That's your right side, right? You know, accounting for special teams and, you know, and overtime and everything. But that's it. That's every minute accounted for on your right side. But if you're going with McDermott, Mata, and Anderson, there's minutes missing.
Off the top of my head, I don't remember the amount of games that McDermott played last year, but it wasn't
30 or 40.
30, 40 games. So, you know, 40% of the season or so. I think we're going to see that again. You know, I think he's going to be in and out of the lineup.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I think it's the latter of your two situations. I think that they are ready to just let the young kids play. And, you know, regardless if it – not to say it could be ugly, or I think they're just going to have to learn on the fly. And, you know, this prospect pool that the Kings have is loaded, but it's young. And at some point you've kind of just got to, you know, quote unquote, throw them in the fire and let them learn for themselves. And you've got Mata, who's been there, done that. You've got Doughty, who's been there, done that. Two guys that they can look up to, that they can learn from, to just, you know, basically fill those extra, you know, 42 minutes of Mata's 18. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what they do. I don't know if they think that they need to get another defenseman because they have enough that at least deserve the opportunity to try to play in the NHL.
Well, yeah, and that raises another question that we just don't have the answer to. But in the, you know, in the war room, right, somebody has the answer to this question. And that is, do they care how they finish at the end of the 2020-21 season, right? Like if they're hell-bent and dead set on either making the playoffs or contending for the playoffs, right? They don't have to make it, but playing important games at the end of the season, then I think they have to go get or retain Ben Hutton or somebody like that, because I just don't think you can pin those hopes on two rookies and Olimata. If they don't care, and if they're leaning towards, listen, we want to get experience for the young guys, we want to build this team, but at the end of the day, if we're picking in the top five again, that's fine. Then you roll out Anderson, Bjornfoot, and Mata, you cross your fingers and you go, listen, if we're getting another top 10 pick next year, so be it.
Obviously the inconsistency is something that you would expect if that's the case. And I mean, the war room has that answer to, do they care where they end? And, you know, let's be honest, as of right now, the Kings roster hasn't changed that much, even though it has the potential to. So, you got to expect that we're going to see a little bit of the same thing next year, just with a little bit of growth from the younger players that are going to be called up.
My favorite aspect of all of this is the domino effect it has conversationally. I don't like talking about the draft. I don't like talking about politics. There's a lot of things I don't like talking about. One of the things that's been driving me crazy for the last 2 years is anytime somebody made a move, the immediate question was, well, what does this have to do with Seattle? What does this mean for the Seattle expansion draft? What is Seattle? And I would say, like, it doesn't mean anything. We're 2 years out. We're 3 years out. We're however many months and days it is. But now this move actually does have a direct impact on what they do regarding Seattle. They now have, between Doughty, Walker, Roy, and Mata, four defensemen under contract that I would, at this moment in time, I would probably protect those four guys. You know, we don't know how this season's going to play out. One of them may play themselves out of a protected spot. But I could well imagine a scenario where those four guys are protected. And if you protect those four defensemen, that means you can only protect four forwards, which probably will be Kopitar, Iafallo, Kempe, and question mark. Now, there's a lot of guys that they don't have to worry about, but there are a lot of guys that they do have to worry about. Wagner, Lizotte, Grunstrom, Firk, etc. And so now this 2020-21 season, this is it, right? The audition that we've been talking about being a potentially important issue, it now is an important issue. You know, if you're one of those guys I just mentioned, you have one season to play yourself into that protected slot. And obviously Seattle can only take one guy, so it's not as if, you know, it's not as if Amadio, Wagner, Firk, Moore, Lizotte.
Yeah, you don't lose half the roster.
Yeah, exactly. But if you want to be one of those guys and you want to guarantee that you stay in L.A., this is it. Now's your chance. Because like I said, unless Mata absolutely disappoints, I imagine they protect him, because I just don't think, now they didn't give up anything to get him, so I suppose you could make the argument that if they exposed him and Seattle claimed him, you shrug and you go, well, whatever, nothing lost, nothing gained, and moving forward.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because this next year is a tryout for a lot of people. We have to, you look at that prospect pool, and I'm fine if you protect four defensemen and take only those four guys, because, we have a roster that finished, 27th in the NHL last year. And, the Kings finished extremely strong by, winning seven straight to end it before the close down with COVID. And, things were looking good and positive with a lot of players playing well. But, at the end of the day, we still need offense. We still need, consistency behind defense. We were one of the lowest scoring teams in the league, and we didn't give up a whole lot of goals, but, I don't think anyone's going to argue the fact that there were quite a few games throughout the season where we left, both Peterson, Campbell before he was traded, and obviously Quick out to dry. And that's where this defense is, let them learn, let them, try to figure out it for themselves. And at the same time, if we're leaving all those guys up for Seattle, it's a tryout, because there's guys coming up the roster. You're going to assume that, you've got Madden, you've got, Fagamo, you've got Kupari, you've got Turcotte, whoever goes second overall. All these guys are coming up quickly, and there's only so many spots at forward. So we'll see where it goes, though.
Well, that's the, I mean, you touched on a couple of really funny things, eh? Like, yeah, the defense on this team, I didn't think was nearly as bad as people portrayed it. You know, there was a point halfway through the season where I made some tweet and a member of the organization, no longer with the organization, looked at me in the press box and was like, come on, this blue line, this defensive core. And I shrugged and I was like, they're not terrible, right? Like, I get it. It's, yeah. You know, it's Walker and Ryan. Nobody ever heard of them. And, you know, Hutton and Ryan are castoffs and, you know,
yeah.
But yeah, the point you made, the excellent point, which is that what they really need is scoring. And to your other point that the roster really hasn't changed that much because Mata is basically just swapping out for Hutton as of now. I want to talk about the rest of the roster now moving forward, specifically the forwards, because I see a lot of talk about who's going to make it and how are they going to rotate the youth in. And I just want to run some names by you and you tell me if I'm crazy. None of this is based on conversations I've had with the organization. This is all just my personal opinion, but I fully expect the top line to be Iafallo, Kopitar, and Brown, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, I can't imagine it changed. It seems to be going fine. And, you know, while I don't think those three are, you know, let's just say one of the top 10 first lines in the NHL right now, they're consistent, and any day that Kopitar is on the ice is a good day for the Kings.
Right. This second line may not stay together, but I fully expect, at least in training camp, for Kempe, Vilardi, and Ferk to be given every chance to play as a line.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, you look at what they were able to do, and I think, you know, Kempe looked to be much more comfortable, or at least he fit in when that line came together. And, you know, while it was only, what, 10, 11 games with Vilardi, you know, first round, 11th overall pick, I can't imagine that they aren't going to give him every opportunity now that he's healthy and he looks like a regular second line NHLer.
Right. So that's your top six. So now moving on from that, you still have Jeff Carter, right, who not sure what's going to happen with the injury, but he's going to play, right? He's not just going to disappear. He's not going to ride off into the sunset and not be there. You've got Blake Lizotte and Austin Wagner, who played a lot of time together on the third line. You've got Trevor Moore, who came in, and a lot of people like his game. And I know a lot of people malign players like Michael Amadio for not putting up offensive numbers, but Michael Amadio had the sixth most minutes at even strength amongst forwards, and he played, I think, 68 of 70 games. So again, like, he's not going to just disappear. They're not just going to, like, wipe their hands and be like, all right, thanks for your service, 68-game player who played a ton of minutes for us and who's been here for three seasons. Like, that's not going to happen. These guys are not bubble players. Like, Trevor Moore, maybe, because he was acquired in a trade at the end of the year. But the rest of those names I rattled off, you know, Wagner and Amadio have 2 years of NHL service under their belts. Blake Lizotte came in and stole a roster spot, and I don't think anybody expects him to take his foot off the gas. Once you factor in all those names I just rattled off, that's Iafallo, Kopitar, Brown, Moore, Vilardi, Carter, Kempe, Lizotte, Ferk, Wagner, and Amadio, that is 11 names that I would really expect to be given every opportunity to be on this roster. So when I see people say Anderson Dolan, Grunstrom, Luff, Turcotte, Kaliev, Fagum, all these names that are going to, like, challenge for a spot, I just shrug and I say, like, realistically, honestly, where are those guys playing? Because when I look at the depth chart, I see fourth line minutes available.
Okay. Can I counter?
Yeah, please.
Read off those names again and tell me where the goals are.
Well,
that's the problem.
Sure. I mean, Iafallo, Kopitar, and Brown are going to do what they do.
That's
and
fine.
You hope
that's
that fine. You get about 20 goals from each of them. Yep. And then the real question is, and this has nothing to do with the depth, the rain or the prospects. This really, what this comes down to is how much offense are you getting out of Kempe, Vilardi, and Ferk?
That's the deal breaker right there.
Yeah.
Exactly. I agree. If that turns into, you know, a solid second line where you can get 10, 15 goals, maybe 25, 20-ish out of one of them, then all of a sudden that's a legitimate conversation of, like, okay, now we have two lines that are tough to match up against. Now, the problem you can run into there is, you know, one guy has 11 games under his belt. Ferk, obviously, has been up and down over the past years when he was in Detroit, I believe, and then you know, last year he came in, you know, we all know how hard he can shoot and what his game is like. Is he going to be a little bit like the Kovalchuk situation where defensively he's a liability? You know, that's still to be determined. Kempe, we've seen good. We've seen bad. We've seen, you know, 20 games where he looks like he belongs as a second liner for the next 20 years. Exaggeration. but at the same time, we've seen him go, what was it, 50-something games without a goal, I can recall, right? So that's where all of a sudden it just – those are the questions that you raise. On top of that, now that you go to the 11 wingers, there's NHLers there that are depth players, but I guess in one way to put it, there's not guys that are going to make an offensive difference for you night in and night out.
Well, that,
and
so
that's
then,
where I think you have the opportunity.
Yeah, well, so that then backtracks to our conversation we had about defense, where we say we don't have the answer to this question, but what is the front office comfortable with finishing in the season, right? Because if they're going to push for a playoff spot, or if they want to push, if they want to have as many important competitive games as possible on the schedule, my inclination would be you play Kempe, Lizotte, and Wagner as a line, you play Amadio and Moore and whoever as a fourth line, and you dedicate your bottom six to preventing goals, and you try and win as many low-scoring games as possible, and you just pray that Vilardi and Ferk, you know, Vilardi was on like a 60-point pace in his 10 games, so you just hope like, okay, we have two top six lines, because if you're going to swap out, if you're going to say, okay, listen, you know, we love Trevor Moore, we love Austin Wagner, we love, you know, Michael Amadio, but these guys don't put up points, and so we're going to give Kaliev and Turcotte and Anderson Dolan, whomever, as many opportunities to score as many points as possible. We're just going, you know, pedal down, offense, offense, offense. You're going to get scored on a lot. a lot.
You're very right, and that's a great point you bring up, because you can't just throw in a bunch of 19 and 21, you know, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds in the bottom six and expect them to not get caught out there against the top lines on the road, especially when we don't have the matchups.
Right.
So that's a great point that, you know, you need some of these guys who are pedal to the metal and just shut you down and not the prettiest, but definitely, you know, reliable. On top of that, you also have to take into consideration who's where the number two draft pick is going to lie. You know, I think everything is pointing towards it obviously being Stützle or Quinton Byfield. You have to assume, being that it's the number two overall pick, that he's going to work his way right into the NHL come day one, if not soon after. So, you know, you don't want to throw him down on the third or fourth line just because that's just not going to benefit him by any means if he's playing 8 minutes a game. So that's another factor you have to take into consideration. It's just I don't think we're done seeing in trades. Obviously, you still have free agency, but I think what we also have to take into consideration is the Kings have a lot of cap space, mm-hmm. and with the flat cap, you know, teams are going to be offloading. We just saw that with Chicago and Olimata to the Kings. Hey, Olimata's a really decent and a really smart addition for the Kings, given their left side of the defense. So, you know, are there more players that are going to be coming in that, you know, we can help, you know, relieve from other teams that allow us to keep, you know, stocking up on draft picks? So there's so many moving pieces, and, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see where the Kings go when it comes to draft day. Do we make trades and get players? Do we make trades and move up to get, you know, prospects? You know, where do we go? I think there's a lot to be figured out, but at the same time, I like where the Kings are in terms of personnel wise. There's a lot of good players that are going to be looking for ice time.
You want to hear my Xbox fever dream alternate reality that'll never happen?
Yep. Let's go for it.
New York shocks the world and drafts Quentin Byfield number one overall.
Okay, like, it's very unlikely, but
none of what I'm about to say will happen. But I'm just I'm just like, this is like Avengers Endgame, where Doctor Strange says there's a one out of whatever 43 million, whatever the number he gives us. Anyway, so okay, so Rangers draft Byfield number one overall. The Kings take Lafreniere, left winger. They then pivot and trade for Patrick Laine. Right, whatever it would take. Now your top line is Lafreniere, Kopitar, and Laine. Your second line is whatever, Kempe, Ferk, Vilardi, whatever it is. And then now you've got a real top line, Lafreniere, Kopitar, Laine, and then they can go ahead and pivot and acquire Torrey Krug somehow in a trade, and you just empty the cupboard, whatever it takes to get Krug and Laine. But, of course, all of this, like I said, hinges on the Rangers taking Byfield number one, which, of course, they won't. And I'm not even sure I would do any of those trades. I just think it would be really interesting. Because that's what I mean, to me, that's what all of this sort of hinges on, is that people keep saying, you know, you need this player, you need that player. And I, at this point in time, I honestly don't think we know what the Kings need. Because last season was an evaluation slash house cleaning, right? We got rid of Forbert, Martinez, Toffoli, you know, in the previous year, Muzzin, Pearson, like.
It was much more of an offloading year than a bring it up and let's get a solid look at these players. You know, Vilardi looked great. I think he had 10 points in 11 games or something along those lines.
7-10.
7-10, like sorry.
Yeah.
And small sample size. You know, you look at Mikey Anderson, played great, couldn't ask for anything more than what we saw. Small sample size, I think 7
very
games.
Small, yeah.
Also, the guy's a winner. He hasn't lost in the NHL, so good on him. Let's keep it that way. 82-0. And it's just that was the problem. Cale Clegg, 4 games. You know, that's the unfortunate thing, is, and that obviously the Kings, that took a real hit when the Kings didn't get to finish out the regular season last year, just because it would have given all these younger players an opportunity for us to see them and see how they played, you know, as the season goes along. So, yeah, you're right. We got rid of more players than we were able to bring up and see what the future looks like. So, and you know, to keep in mind, we talk about all these prospects, and you know, you bring up the chaotic moves of, oh, bring in Laine, bring in Krug. You know, it's the brutal reality of, you know, the 15-20 prospects that the Kings have that all have NHL potential, you know, based on, you know, scouts and analysts who know the game better than you and I. They're not all going to play in a Kings uniform. Do we end up trading, you know, one or two of them to get a bigger name, to make a move based on, you know, where the Kings feel that they sit and, you know, with the timeline of making a playoff push? Do I think it's this year? Probably not. But at the same time, we have to keep in mind that, you know, not all these guys are going to make it to the NHL in a Kings uniform.
One final thought from me on the Mata trade, and it was triggered by something you said about Anderson being a winner. I've been thinking a lot as the draft gets closer. I've been looking back at Kings rosters and Kings players and trying to figure out where this team compares to where the team was when it was building towards the Cup years.
Okay.
Because a lot of people have been saying, oh, this is number two overall pick. It's just like when they got Doughty. And I don't think it's any. I don't think it's anything like when they got Doughty.
I do agree with that. Yeah.
When they got Doughty, they already had in the system Anže Kopitar, Dustin Brown, and Jonathan Quick. And those three guys, Brown was drafted, made the league at 18. Kopitar was drafted, spent 1 year in Sweden, and then when he stepped onto NHL ice, he was Anže Kopitar, right? From his first game, his first goal, he was a first-line center. There was no question about it. Jonathan Quick spent 4 years in college, then spent 1 year splitting time in the ACHL and the AHL, and then the next year, when he got his chance, you know, he played 44 games, I think, as a King, and then that was it, right? The debate was settled. It didn't matter that they had Bernier. It didn't matter that they had Hertzberg. Like, Jonathan Quick was the guy. I look at this roster, and with the exception of Gabe Vilardi, the Kings don't have a guy. You know, Bjornfoot might wind up being him if he steps onto NHL ice this year and stays and has a great career. But they don't have any sort of bona fide blue chip, aha, that right there is a superstar guy. And I don't think that you need them necessarily, but even the Kings' lower tier players back when they acquired Doughty, like Kyle Clifford was a second round pick, and everybody said his ceiling is second liner. But when he made the NHL, I think he played 1 year in juniors after being drafted, and then he made the league, spent his full season up as a rookie, and in his rookie season had a great playoff after Kopitar got hurt. Like, even your depth players on the Kings had really short windows between the time they were drafted and the time they made an impact. And so the reason I bring all that up and drone on and on about that is looking at Olli Maatta's career. I think he was like the youngest player to make the Finnish junior team. He's got a bronze medal. I think he won a couple of juniors. I think he won the Memorial Cup. Like, he's one of those guys. He is one of those guys. He's a blue chipper, right? Even if he doesn't live up to his to the ceiling that he had when he was drafted 22nd overall in the first round, even if he's not, like, he is clearly a solid, competent, accomplished, really great hockey player. And if you can have a guy like that on your second pair, that's where you go, okay, phew, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, the guy's a problem solver. He's a winner. He knows how to put himself in positions to be someone that can make an impact, whether it's defensively or on the offensive end. You know, he's not the most offensively talented defenseman, but at the same time, you know, that's not what he's always been asked to do in his life. The guy knows how to play defense. Think of a guy like Nicklas Hjalmarsson, who is in Chicago and now in Arizona. You know, he's one of those guys who, if you don't hear his name, he did his job and he played great. You know, the Kings have some of them. A little bit like Sean Walker, I think. You know, a guy who's, if he's quiet, it's probably because he did what he was supposed to do. I know that Cole Holtz has been defined as that as well. So, you know, Olimata, I think it's a good addition. I think it's someone who's going to help these younger guys learn how to be successful, what it takes to be a winner. The good thing is that, you know, a lot of the kids that are in the organization with the Kings, that's something that they can benefit off of. You know, you've got Doughty, who's, you know, been able to teach some of the younger guys, and, it'll be interesting to see, you know, where Mata fits in terms of, you know, does he play with Doughty? Can he go from 18 minutes to 22 or so on and so forth? But, all in all, I think, you know, the Mata trade opens up a lot of doors for the younger players to both learn and grow from someone on the left side.
And one final last detail on the trade. Because they did trade Brad Morrison, they wind up not altering the number of total contracts that they have. There's a 50 contract limit for NHL clubs. And so, not that it's a huge deal, not that the Kings were in danger of going over the limit, but they're edging closer and closer to it. And with 11 players about to be drafted, plus all the guys who have not yet signed ELCs. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point you want to see these prospects turn into players that you'd want to sign to a contract. Right. So at some point it is nice. And as I said, no disrespect to Brad Morrison as a guy, but probably the least, like, if you had to rank the players that the Kings had under contract, I would argue that Brad Morrison was probably, if not the bottom, this very close to it.
Yeah. I mean, hey, this is why, you know, the hockey operations get paid the big bucks,
right?
You know, to be able to keep themselves under cap, to put themselves in a position where they're able to take on contracts. Now, obviously, we know that we're in, you know, quote unquote, rebuilding, rebranding, however you want to call it, situation for the roster, and we're turning over and trying to, you know, become a new identity and change the way that the game is played on in a black, silver, and white uniform. But at the same time, you know, no one knew that COVID was coming and that, you know, the cap was going to stay the same and that this was going to become such an interesting offseason because of that, you know, that cap. But at the same time, you have to be happy with, you know, what the Kings are doing and being able to take in a guy who has experience and get rid of someone who wasn't going to be in a Kings uniform.
I think at the end of the day, we both agree this is a great trade.
Yes. I mean, I completely, yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. So, like I said, I don't think they're done tinkering with the left side. That's just an opinion. I could be wrong. Maybe they retain Ben Hutton. Maybe they don't. Either way, we've got the draft coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday. Jack, you'll be joining me on day two for the live draft show. Everybody pay attention to King's social media for details if you have not yet heard about, I think we're going on around noon, 12:30. I think it'll sort of depend on when the seventh round wraps up. But the Kings currently have 11 picks. We all fully expect them to move at least a couple of them. but please do tune in. Jack, I want to thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk more personnel and more drafts coming up.
Yeah, man. Thanks to Seth Rohrbaugh from Pittsburgh for his input on Olimata. Thanks for listening. And stick around, Kings fans. We'll talk to you soon.